Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we have an interesting topic, spiritual transformation. Oh no, another thing you have to learn, another thing you have to do to be able to be of this world. Oh gosh, how many times have we heard this? How many times have we heard people say, oh, but you're not on the right path, you don't know your mission, you don't know what's going on, oh gosh, I don't know who you are, who are you today, who were you yesterday, and do I have to give up my friends and all of this backlog of stuff that I've been carrying around? Goodness gracious, chill people, it's a lot easier than that. All we're going to say is, how can we be kinder, loving? Can we just say things are just not as important as they used to be, and we sure don't have to collect all that stuff that we keep carrying around. Isn't that going to be an easier way to live? Today, my guest is Patrick Paul Garlinger, and his book is When Thought Turns to Light, A Practical Guide to Spiritual Transformation. He'll be sharing his path on how he saw his life going forward and about his own evolution. Patrick, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Dr. Jeanette, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. So, Patrick, don't you think I'm of the older generation? I'll be 61 this year, and sometimes when I have these young whippersnappers, as I call them, on for guests, they're like, oh, but it's so easy. You just do it this way. And I said, dude, I'm carrying so much baggage from all these decades and all of these ancestral lineages. I'm the one that has to clean it up. Oh, goodness gracious, right?
I'm chuckling because, I definitely don't think of myself as a whippersnapper. I'm 45, so I'm carrying my own, baggage and ancestral lineage, but you're absolutely right. We carry this around with us, and sometimes we think it's really easy. One of the things that happens is that we then set ourselves up for a kind of a failure because we think, oh well, I've got to get somewhere, and then this stuff sticks with me, and how come I haven't gotten rid of it yet? Which is just
Where the worst place to be is when you start on the path and you don't get that aha moment or that burst of white light, or you're not out singing mantras on the corner in your white drag, and you say, okay, now, but I left all my old stuff, what do I do now? And you're like, you're in the middle, and that's a tough place to be.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. That's a tough place to be. And I'm, a lot of people don't have, for a long time, those aha moments. They don't have the burst of white light. And they say, when is it going to happen? And they're continuing to do their practices, right, meditation, mantra. And they think that to be on the path, that you have to have that to validate,
right,
where you are. And that's just not the case.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the word spiritual transformation, because that's really what you're talking about your book. And what do those words mean to you?
Yes. What do those words mean to me? So I think let's just take the word spiritual, because that's a word that, a lot of people use. And for a lot of people, it means one thing or another. Some people use it as a kind of loose way to refer to, religion or belief in a higher power or in something like spirit, without wanting to present themselves in some sort of dogmatic way. They kind of want to avoid the word religion. And, other people, use it, and you ask them, well, what does that mean? And they can't really define it for you. You know, it's a kind of a loose sense of not wanting to be seen as just material, or that you have, you know, broader concern for the well-being of others or society. For me, spirituality is, and what spiritual transformation really entails is really coming to accept that everyone that you meet, everything that's happening in your life is equally divine in every way, equally worthy of everything that life has to offer. All the abundance that's out there, all of the possibilities, that despite whatever differences they've had and whatever they've done in the past, they're still worthy as human beings. But, and that's true for ourselves, which I think is the hardest part, right? And that's where, to me, spiritual transformation comes in, is really beginning to work with your own thoughts about yourself. Because we're our worst critics. We have all these mm-hmm. beliefs about ourselves, and that's the place of where transformation is beginning, is to really start to untangle all the things that you say and do to yourself that really tell yourself that you're not worthy of everything that life has to offer.
You know, I think as I've lived in many of my decades across the entire country, different areas in which you live, different areas in which people that you would interact with have different views on the way you live your life, the way you eat, the way you interact. And right now I'm living in New Orleans, and I'll tell you, the violence, the disregard for human beings, the violence and abuse is very high here. The riots all the time and everything for something or someone because someone feels like they aren't heard, or someone just feels like they want to yell loud enough to be on TV. And I think we say, how can we say that there is a spiritual transformation on the earth going on when we look out our window and we see things like this and we say, huh, get my coat. I'm going to go out and join them because I'm on one or both of those sides, you know, of the people that are out there rioting, right?
I love this question. I love this question because, you know, when we look out at the world, we, and this is pretty common when a question that when you're on a spiritual path, you look at the world and you say, wait a minute, look at all that's happening. Look at all this strife, all these people who are doing all these things to each other. And it's true. There's incredible violence. The planet is, you know, under siege. Political systems are in disarray. And in many ways, my point of view is that all of this is coming up because it's sort of like a boil being lanced. It's coming up because as we go through sort of paradigm shifts and as people start to wake up, which is what's happening, is more and more people are waking up slowly but surely, even to awareness of what's happening with their political system. That energy, those, you know, energies come up, and they don't want to be let go of. I mean, how many of us on a personal level, just take, you know, an individual level, have, you know, some sort of, you know, issue, say, with anger or patience, right, or self-loathing? And what happens the moment you've decided that you're going to work on that? You're going to – that anger doesn't want to go away. And if you worked on it for years and years and you're like, wait a minute, how am I still angry? That's here. Well, this is what's happening on a collective level. It's coming up. And tend to think that this externalization of all of this that's going on, which does reflect the fact that we have created all sorts of social structures that are deeply, deeply unequal and don't reflect the value of human life, those things are being dismantled. And it's not pretty. I know it's really, you know, it feels very precarious in many ways right now. But
well,
the relationship to
when
it
you
is,
see it,
is really where you're spending.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If it's happening across the street, or, you know, you go to sleep and, you know, the drive-bys are popping your house, what do you see? And how do you, I mean, quite literally, people will either succumb to it and join it, they will go in denial of it, or they'll move. Three choices, right?
Yeah. Right. So I say, you know, if you're dealing with, you know, extreme violence and you are faced with a life-threatening situation, well, you exit it as best as you can, as quickly as you can. But if you are looking at the world around you and saying, this is a sign of decay, this is a sign of failure, or you're looking at those people and saying, these are horrible human beings, then you in many ways have gone into a state of judgment where you are in some ways compounding the issue. Now, that's not to say that you have to agree with it and align with it and say, as you said, one of the choices is to join it. And many people feel that they don't have a choice in that. But the fact is we do have a choice whether to join that. And we join it in a certain way when we condemn them for it. So if you see somebody who's behaving in some of the most heinous ways towards another human being, for me, my response is one of incredible compassion for that human being, which is not to say that they're not being held, shouldn't be held responsible for their actions, but to understand the source of their actions, which is that they are completely misguided about the nature of reality and who they are, and filled with such pain that they believe that the only way to relate to reality is by harming another person, stealing, killing, whatever that the action may be that is so deeply, deeply misguided, to understand that the pain that they feel that leads to that is enormous, and that's the place where you don't condone it. You don't say that the action is appropriate, but you don't write them off as a human being that's sort of no longer worthwhile.
Right. But you also don't have to engage. You don't have to participate, and you don't need to be in the energy field of it. I know a lot of people come here to New Orleans, you know, because they think it's a great place to eat and drink, you know. But if we even look at that, what that also is two extremes. They want to do – everybody comes here for an extreme experience. They don't come here just to, you know – do things that they would normally do within their own form of balance. You come here to overeat, you come here to overdrink, you know. Right now there's over violence, there's over whatever, you know, they're taking the Confederate monuments down in the middle of the night and causing all kinds of trouble now. And it's, people are saying, I'm just going to, you know, just let it chill, just let it go. And they hide their head in the sand. And when you hide your head in the sand, I'm not so sure that, quote, spiritual people say, oh, well, it doesn't affect me. I won't enter it into my spiritual realm, and I'm just going to sit here and do my meditation. And I'm going, well, okay then. You know? I mean, I think that that's what we have to look at, because when these social systems start to crack, start to burn, start to disintegrate, everybody's spiritual can't sit there and do a mantra when they come and it's trouble. So how are we going to be able to, in our minds, reframe and change things? Or how is the world going to change that? Do you know what I'm saying? I think that's a really difficult question. I think we've been asking it randomly on and off with this radio show before. And we really haven't come to a place where everybody has felt comfortable or trusting. They are more in the allowance phase, and we will see. And I think that's where everybody is pretty much now. We will just have to wait and see.
Right. So you've hit on, you know, the $100,000 question, or maybe it's the $1 million question, you know. And I want to respond to the first thing which you said is, you know, you said, oh, you don't have to engage. And I think that that's right. So I think that, you know, there's two tendencies, at least, that I'm going to talk about really quickly. The first is the kind of savior mentality for spiritual people who, you know, who feel that they do have to step in and they do have to solve the problem. And, you know, many people, you know, they have an awakening and they begin to see how their life changes. and they want to become a healer and they want to help other people. And it's a beautiful, beautiful impulse because it's rooted in the sense of like, listen, there's another way to be in this world. But, you know, people have their, you know, people are responsible for their own lives. So you can't always step in. And I do think that there are times when it is okay to step away from negative energy. And here, you know, if it's just an example of, you know, family members who are difficult or coworkers or friends, some situation where, you know, you might not want to be in that energy, I don't think that there's anything wrong about saying I'm not going to engage in that. We can talk about that more because that's sort of a bigger question of how do you relate to people when, you know, you no longer feel like you're in alignment.
Right. But and then we even take the
question of,
but we also, can you go back 1 second to where you said about with
sure.
the survivor, with the healer, because I think there's a lot of people in many generations too that came in as healers. And this lifetime, they had to learn they couldn't save everybody. But there's others
mm-hmm.
who did not learn healing nor surviving yet, being, as you know, doing that. So learning how to save others, you know. So I think we have so many different types of people, and sometimes they clash when they're on different paths, right?
Yes. No, that's right. And the for me, that interaction is always a question of meeting somebody where they're at. So, you know, the awakening process is one that is not something that you can really control for somebody else. You know, people come in this
right.
lifetime, and this may not be the lifetime where they're meant to awaken. As painful as
right.
that might be for those who are here to help awaken the planet, you might say to yourself, well, why wouldn't you awaken? It might not be that individual's life plan. Maybe their life plan in this lifetime is to learn something as basic as patience, you know, and that's
mm-hmm.
it. And maybe they accomplish that. Now, what that means is that you being a healer, recognize that you are not in control of where they're supposed to end up, but that you can be there for them on that path. Like, you are not going to be moved from who you are by virtue of the fact that they don't seem to be awakening in the manner that you think they should be.
Right.
There's a kind of arrogance almost to that. Even if you might say, wow, I can see the potential for you if you were to awaken. And for me,
correct.
That's always a question of being with that person in the way that you know that they can be, of seeing their, you know, divinity coming through, seeing their light, seeing their potential, and interacting with them as if that's who they were without trying to convince or persuade them in the way that, you know, we so often do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's actually part of – go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think that's part of the answer to the other question of rebuilding our society. And a lot of us,
right.
you know, we go about rebuilding society in ways that try to persuade everyone. And we've got a huge, huge issue, which is that, you know, most of the world reflects our sense of separation from each other and the sense
mm-hmm.
that we're not really divine spiritual beings with infinite capacities for creation. And so, you know, we go about trying to persuade people that they're wrong or persuade people that they need to change. And
mm-hmm.
this becomes very difficult when we start contemplating how are we going to reform a legal system? How are we going to reform an economic system, our political system, et cetera. And I'm not saying that the normal avenues of change need to be discarded, but our way to relate to it in many ways is to say, this is where it's at. My interaction is going to always be premised on the possibility for something that is inclusive and life-affirming. And it's one of the reasons why I think that, you know, our political discourse is so bogged down, is that, you know, we always speak in terms of fighting, we speak in terms of resistance, we speak in terms of, you know, the binary opposition between, you know, two sides.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, and in that sense, we just continue to play out this sense of separation from somebody, from another side, and we go into judgment. They're wrong, we're right. We're going to take power, and then they're upset, and the other side wants to take power. So how do you start meeting those people and seeing where they're misguided and relating to them still as divine creations?
It's not easy. I think the biggest thing, too, is that people have it's not that far back in history where people learned that the Earth was round. Come on. You know, we seem to think it was like bazillions of years ago, and it really wasn't. You know, and we think about the Internet now with so much exponential information there that we can access at our fingertips. Well, people are still living in the concept that they believe like a water balloon. They were given a water balloon, and if you pull some of the water balloon over to you, that's going to leave them with less. They want to pull it all to them and to hold on to it at all costs. And then sometimes when you take the water balloon and you've got kids and husbands and jobs and all this other stuff, and the water balloon just breaks in all other directions, you say there's nothing left for me. So I think sometimes when people are thinking about the concepts we're talking about today on the radio, spiritual awakening, transformation, all of these different words of living in a different type of life and having a different perspective on things, they're still stuck with the water balloon. That's clearly where they are, and it may be, as you've said, and I've said it many times, is that they maybe just in this lifetime they just had to learn, oh, okay, I can have two jobs instead of one and I'm still okay, or I can be sick and I can let someone else take care of me, or I can learn that I could still survive if I'm living under a bridge. These simple concepts that they may need to learn versus saying that there's other concepts that everyone has to take on to be, quote, living in the green, I call it. You know, everybody's got to be in the flow now, you know, or you're going to be kicked off the earth. It's kind of like, dude, no, really, you know, stop. Because that in its way, you just end up with spiritual gurus or junkies who they in themselves, while they say they are not judging, they've already judged just by the act of saying that. That is judgment, you know?
That's absolutely right. And you've alluded a couple times now to a topic that I think is really important, which is this sense of spiritual bypass, which is that, you know, none of it's going to affect me. I'm going to just withdraw, and I'm going to you know, chant some mantras, and I'll retreat, and you know, let the world take care of itself. And you know, that's a mistake too. I mean, you know, I know a lot of people who, you know, when they do have an awakening and they begin to see the possibilities of what could be, and then they look at the world around them and think, oh my goodness, how are we going to clean this up? And the immensity of it all seems so challenging. So
right.
There's the sense, well, you know, I'm just going to take care of myself. Which
correct.
Is itself part of the problem, right? I mean, the world is
right.
A reflection of all of us. So you have a responsibility. Now, and for me, the spiritual transformation is about how do I, you know, what is my entry point and how do I relate to all of this without going into judgment, without you know, writing off these people or expecting them to be where they're not, all of these ways of judging them with an expectation that the world's going to end up looking like something else. And that's part of it is, right? You know, everyone is basically operating under a notion of what they think the world should look like to be this, you know, cohesive place or the place where they're going to survive, which is, you know, basically everybody trying to grab the water balloon, as you that
right.
Beautiful image.
Right.
You know, so much
and
of the imbalance
too,
on our planet.
Yeah.
What's that?
But don't you think too that as we see things start to fall apart? I mean, look, healthcare is going to go down like nobody's business. I've said this probably on the radio about 7 years ago. I said it's not going to explode; it's going to implode. And we see this now with a lot of the healers that are leaving their professions. Physicians are committing suicide. Other physicians are leaving their practices. people are getting into it. They're staying for a year or two, and they're like, oh, I am so over this. And then still we look at the patients who are going in for help, and I really see them as they are almost, they're not quite aware with what they're asking for. And what they're really asking for is to find their place with ease in life, as I call it.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're really going in and saying, I have a pain here. Can't you poke on it, look on the machine, and give me something for it to go away? You know, and let's talk a little bit about healing and the concept of healing. I mean, is a person who is dying with cancer, who is all alone in a nursing home, and who says her rosary every single day, is she looking for a healing? Does she have a healing every single day? Or is a healing just her perspective on her life? I mean, I would venture to say that healing is just being at ease, again, with who you are and where you are, and just, you know, being at peace. We get so many people who are saying, you need to fix me at all costs. You know, this thing with the insurance, fix me at all costs. I'm going to run my body right up the road so many times. And every time I do, you better fix me so I look like I'm 20. And we say, what is the true meaning of healing?
Mm-hmm. I really agree with what you just said about healing being at ease with where you are. Because to take the example of the person that you just described, the cancer patient in the nursing home who's saying the rosary every day, you know, what is that person's relationship to their condition? Is the rosary, is every time they say, you know, repeat the rosary, they go through their practice, are they feeling this urgent need for this condition to be lifted, to be eradicated from their body? Is that what they want? Are they at peace with where their body is? Even if they might be feeling, you know, pain or aware that they're, you know, that they're, you know, the end of their life may be approaching.
Right.
For me, healing really is, and is the sense that we have let go of the fear that we are not loved and that we're not whole and that we're incomplete. I really do believe that almost every condition is connected to some underlying belief about ourselves. And that belief may be rooted in a specific trauma, maybe some, or just a mental pattern that we've reiterated again and again and again in our lives. And where it shows up in the body is often an indication of what it might be connected to. And, you know, and then it eventually manifests physically. And so healing really is, for me, the place where we've come to identify what it is that we really believe about ourselves. What is this deep, deep-seated belief? And then we let it go because it's always wrong. It's always an illusion in some way. But getting there, that's not easy. You know, these are, you started out saying, you know, you've got, you know, years and years of baggage and lineage, ancestry karma, which, you know, is really, you know, in a scientific way is saying DNA, right? You know, that's our ancestry lineage in physical form is we've got our genes. And suddenly we've got all these patterns from our family and you realize, oh, I'm getting a condition that my mother had or my grandfather had or, you know, and you think back it's something that's been passed along again and again. And I'm not saying by any means that Western medicine should be disregarded. I never want anyone to believe that. Sometimes there's a misconception that means that, you know, you shouldn't go see your doctor. No, by all means, but understand that, you know, sometimes what you're treating, what you need to treat through Western medicine is only getting to part of is only part of the solution.
But also to the concept that when people hear about the healings, you know, of spiritual work, and they think of the healing, you know, they expect that their body will be, quote, free from disease and all infirmities. And while we may like to put that out there, we can meditate on it, we can think about it, we can do whatever we would like with that, but we can also believe that our body will shift because it is energy. However, total perfection, what is perfection? And then you come back to the concept of you're perfect as you are in the moment. So if you're trying to heal something and trying to, quote, get somewhere so that you will have the perfection of body, mind, and spirit, is that an illusion to think that that's almost like putting a pinnacle up there and saying, I got to get up there because that's where I've got to be, versus living and being and accepting and responsibility for where you are in the moment? That's two different things.
Yeah. Well, I love this first point that you made, which is that, you know, people think that once they've sort of gotten on a spiritual path and they've gone through certain healings and maybe they've had, you know, sort of miraculous experiences, where conditions have alleviated really quickly, they think, you know, I'm now going to be immune.
Right.
And that is not the case. That is so not the case. I mean, you know, you're never going to be immune. Well, and let's be clear, you know, our bodies, we will all die. Our bodies will end. That is the one, you know, experience that we will all have. And I know of no guru, I know of no spiritual teacher out there who said, well, actually, I'm not going to die. My physical form is not going to die. It will.
Mm-hmm.
It's meant to. It's meant to. Our experience in this particular form is meant to be finite. But and we will have other issues come up because, you know, when you've cleared out something, you know, say you had some sort of cancer or a tumor or just, you know, some sort of digestive system issue, something, and you were able to identify, oh, this is really deeply rooted in this belief that I learned or some experience I had as a child, and I've been playing this out, and I've cleared that, and I've corrected the foods that I was eating in response to that, because that's energy that we're taking into our bodies all the time. And I'm doing all these other things, and then lo and behold, something else happens. You know, immediately people think, oh no, I'm backtracking, right? Where have I gone wrong?
Right.
I haven't been doing enough mantra. I haven't been doing enough prayer. When I actually think, you know, you've just hit another layer. You've just hit another layer of something in your karmic history that's come up and said, guess what? I'm ready to be dealt with. Not unlike what's happening on the planet. Comes up, being ready to be released and dealt with. Like the way, you know, you suddenly have a condition just like something that's happening in our society. It's that energy is coming up to be released, and it's how you relate to it. And when spiritual people sort of relate to it, it's like, oh, I'm a failure. That's
right.
That's not the response. It's like, yay, oh, look. And that's not always, sometimes it's not always instantly fun, right? You know, you get another thing that happens. You're like, really? Wait, I've got this now?
Yeah.
You know, it's okay to be like, wow, okay, I've got another condition, and I had a nice run there where my health seemed perfect, and now I'm going to get back to the question of, what is this telling me? What is the lesson here?
Mm-hmm.
What part of me is coming up to be loved?
Right.
And
also too, I think the concept that, when people say that you did something wrong, I mean, we see heart cardiologists, heart surgeons, they die of a heart attack every day. Come on. People that, you know, the best cancer guy in the world could probably die of cancer. Well, do you think he was studying it just because he wanted to save himself? He was doing it because he knew the condition, he felt it intimately, and he shared that experience with his patients. That's a huge difference. So we have to look at it is that if we have some sort of debilitating something or other or disease or condition, the point is to feel it intimately, to experience it on every single level. I know I've always said this on my shows is that I can truly say over my past 6 decades that I've lived a life of multiple to many, many experiences. I almost felt like I was a kid all the time walking around with my pointed finger poking at things, poking a person. Hey, what are you made of? Hey, what do you got to say? Hey, what do you got to do? Or, ooh, stick your finger in that outlet. What does that do? Or, hey, ooh, that looks cool. What does that feel like? What does that touch like? What does that smell like? And I've done this my whole life. It's just, it's been me. And I think sometimes when we look at these layers, that's really what it's, or the universe is asking us to delve into something intimately and say, if you have a heart attack, okay, where is my heart not open? Where did I feel that pain? Am I scared? Am I holding too tight onto somebody that I want to save me? Or did I just lose someone? The theme of a broken heart is a real medical condition. It is a physical condition. It's emotional, spiritual on every level. So I think the idea that each time we see things, it's more of, I always say life is just a ball of experiences. So, you know, forget the names, forget the judgment. It doesn't faze me. It almost kind of goes through my head and I don't even recognize what I said, did, or what. You know, it's just an experience. So when we think of these things about healing, it's like, oh, yeah, okay, got it. So what will I learn so intimately about this, you know?
Well, I completely agree, and I love the notion of intimacy here, because that's really what it's asking about. I mean, when we feel any discomfort, what happens? What do we instantly do? We run, right? We don't want to feel uncomfortable in any way. So much of our lives are built around comfort and avoiding discomfort in every realm. And, you know, healing and any kind of ailment of the body is where we are exceptionally sensitive. But it really is about getting intimate with it, listening to that body and experiencing it. You know, when you, I find, you know, when something happens, even if it's just a pain, you know, a minor strain, when you just really learn to be with it, it already begins to dissipate. You know, the body is just waiting to be here, to be heard. And so when you have an even more serious condition, you know, yes, you're going to go through and you're going to do all the things that you need to, that that your healthcare professionals, you know, tell you you need to do. But you also need to get intimate with it. As you said, if you've got a heart condition, you know, it's not just enough to go and have the, you know, EKG and, you know, whether you know, you're having a stent put in or whatever, a bypass. You know, you need to get in touch with what is going on with your heart. You know, where are you holding on to really old pain, and be and feel that, and really feel it. I can tell you that, you know, I have, I've had some tremendous, you know, kind of white light experiences as you described at the beginning, and I've had a number of energetic experiences, and myself went through a period where I was like, oh, okay, well, this means I'm never going to get sick again. I pressed into that, and it's not true. You know, I feel like every time I've actually
did a door just hit you in the head?
It did, right? It was like the next week I get sick. I'm like, oh, thank you for reminding. It's almost as if the thought was actually the precursor. It's actually the condition saying, I'm coming. Yeah. And
you reaffirm, you know, the concept that you put out there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, any time that I've had a condition, it's called for the real healing has been when I've sort of realized that there's really a deep fear there. And ultimately, at the end of it all, it's our fear of death.
Yeah.
It's the fear that's driving virtually everything in our lives. And it comes out in the most, in, you know, the simplest way with our fear of discomfort, but it's really the fear that we're, that we'll die and not knowing what that means. And, you know, we don't have a culture of really talking about death in any kind of constructive way. And I think that that's, you know, kind of odd and also poignantly sad in that, you know, our healthcare professionals deal with death all the time, and we don't have a culture that really addresses death. And so, you know, healing for me is always, in some ways, you in some, you know, sort of minor way or sometimes major way, but always in some small step towards dealing with that ultimate question, you know.
You know, it's the funniest thing you said about that, because I have a neighbor. She's 93, and I just probably in the past few months, like maybe once a month, she'll stop by or something, or I'll go over to check on her. And I went to check on her the other day, and she walked in. She says, come in. She plopped down on the couch, and she's no more than 90 pounds, and she's like almost 6 feet tall. And she plopped down on the couch, and she says, "What?" She was yelling. She says, why is God not taking me? I'm done. I'm bored. I'm bored. And then I listened to her for a little while. I listened to her for a little while and everything. And then finally I said, well, I got to go. And she says, okay. And I says, oh, and by the way, I says, now you know I'm an intuitive, so just let me know when you go poof. She says, okay, I'll let you know when I go poof. And we were kind of like, cool, you know. And it was like such a – I mean, we weren't in the dread of it. Do you know what I'm saying? I don't relate dread to death. I never have. I've spent so many decades in hospitals, emergency rooms, open heart surgery, working with end of life clients, that dread does not, that's another thing that just kind of doesn't resonate in my head. So I guess I came in with that ability to be able to help others with it, because it doesn't pull me down. It doesn't, I don't see that dread as an option, you know. I had worked with an end-of-life client, and she said, am I going to die today? And I said, not today. So we went and drove around her favorite neighborhood, and she burned through 5 big canisters of oxygen. And she says, that's where I used to sit on the porch, you know, on the little stoop outside all the time. And I says, honey, your butt would never fit on that stoop today. And we laughed, you know. We had fun. We just did the lightness of it. And then she ended up in the hospital the next day, and they said, well, okay, she doesn't want to die in the hospital. I said, fabulous. You're going to have a birthday party. So she, at 3 wow. o'clock in the morning, they took her out of the hospital at 3 o'clock in the morning to her house. Hospice was already there set up. They had a huge birthday party at 3 o'clock in the morning, and she died like at 7 that morning. But, and I just, why not do that stuff? I just don't, I guess I don't see the other stuff. It's sort of like, don't bother with a funeral. You're not going to bury me. What's the point? I'm not already here, and it's only all about you then. So, you know, and it's, no, we're not going to do that. You know, we're going to enjoy the moments. We're going to enjoy the time and move on, you know. Go on, yeah, move on. So I guess I kind of see that in a way, and I think many times that shocks clients. It shocks the families even more. Sometimes they don't want the clients to come back because it's the family's issues. You know, they will feel left or abandoned or blah, 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 or whatever. However, once you've planted that seed, I think that it's so important just about planting seeds. They do eventually lighten up. They do eventually, even if it's only 10% of the dread around it, they lighten up and they realize, okay, we're good to go. You know, this is okay. I'm ready to go. I mean, when I told the lady 93, well, let me know if you go poof tomorrow. You know, she's, oh, okay, poof, I'll be gone. And it was like, hey, okay, cool, you know, it's okay. And I think that's where we really need to get, and that is an ultimate, what I call spiritual transformation, because you can see how you can go through the stages of human, where we are having these diseases, complications, live in a world that's really tumultuous at this time, go through death and end up on the other side, all while forming a circle of that versus a linear progression of that. I know that
I
was
love
a lot.
That story. No, that was a beautiful story. And I think that really is the heart of spiritual transformation, is coming to see that that movement from the linear progression that you just described to the circle, and really letting go of this fear of death and everything that comes before that, you know, which is the versions of the fear of death that we have in our lives of, you know, I'm not lovable, I'm not worthy, or if I do this, you know, something calamitous is going to happen, or I'm going to be abandoned, people will hate me.
Right.
All these things play out as just versions of death. And we know from countless stories of people who've had death experiences that they come back and they have a completely different relationship to life.
And some don't.
You know, they all.
And some don't.
Some don't. Some don't.
Yeah.
But some do. And, you know, in many ways, the description that I find very interesting about when people talk about having those sorts of things is very much, mm-hmm. it's very similar in tone and description of what it's like having a kind of, you know, enlightenment experience.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, that there's this release of fear. So I really think that, you know, and I don't like speaking of ultimate goals, but kind of the core issue that we're all grappling with when it comes to spiritual transformation is ultimately, you know, the fear of death.
Right.
I did want to point out too, what I thought was beautiful about what you described is how you said you just planted a seed and,
mm-hmm.
you know, you weren't trying to persuade the family that they needed
Correct.
To be exactly where you were. You know, you said they got maybe 10%, mm-hmm. but that 10%
right.
can be everything for them.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, if that's how we relate to everyone, you know, when we're talking about and relating to them, is planting a seed, and not saying I'm going to crack you wide open and you're going to be completely on the same page as me, in,
right.
you know, in an hour or a week.
Right. And or doing it so that you can quote fix them is even worse, you know. Do it so I can
exactly.
be your hero and I can be your rescuer, and that's just not where it is. And you know what I think, Patrick, too, in your book, again, your book is When Thought Turns to Light, A Practical Guide to Spiritual Transformation. You know, I think you share a lot of different topics in here, but you also give some tips and some inspiring questions at the end of each chapter. You know, many times people will say, I hear it, but give me something else. And when you ask the questions at the end of the chapter, that's something for people to say, oh, okay, now that ties in. And you can go back to the chapter, read it again, or you can go find another chapter. And again, your book is it's very concise. It's not a large book. It's not something I would say, or even, I would never say this. Open it up. And all you want to do is you want to just open to whatever the page is. You don't have to read it from front to back. I always tell people, when I get so many books, I probably have about thousands of books. I start the book from the back. I read the last 10 pages. And then what I do is I just flop it open. And then I just, whatever is there, then I'll read a little bit there. And then I'll say, oh, okay. And then I might go to the beginning. But many books, and yours is one of them, that I just read from in between, you know? I didn't start from front to back. It wasn't a story that was necessary to unfold. It was a story where you were. So really your book is about when your book opens up, it's saying, oh, this must be what I needed to hear today. This might be where I need to start. Nourishment might be the simplest thing that I can tackle in my mind today. Meditation certainly might not be. Or even devotion, oh gosh, that's not really on my list. Or service, maybe not. But if you look at nourishment, you can start there. Or if you look at something easier and you think about, you know, what could be something really easy? What about my beliefs? Maybe I'll start there. So your book is really well put out that people don't have to progress, you know, in any similar manner to anyone else, but they can pick their path to start.
Well, thank you. I'm really humbled by your words. And I hadn't thought about it in terms of just being able to open it up and have it be relevant. But I'm so glad
right.
you had that experience because you really spoke to something that I feel so profound, I feel really strongly about, which is that, and it's one of the, I think the downsides of the word transformation, or at least it implies, you know, a sense of progress and that you
right.
have to get from point A to point B, or from A to Z.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think a lot about process and the way in which we all kind of do evaluate ourselves from getting from here to there. And it's never about that. In any experience I've ever had where I've tried to get through something, or thought, mm-hmm. oh, this is how I'll be on the other side. It's never been that way.
Right.
You just start with, as you said, you start with whatever you can right now. If that's just a little bit more self-love, forgiving yourself for something that you've been holding on to, identifying one thought that you have about yourself. You know, you wake up and you say, I'm not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Just start with that. You know, you don't have to have this 2-hour repertoire of, well, I'm going to meditate for an hour and then I'm going to do some mantra and I'm going to do some prayer and I'm going to do all of this. You know, you just start and then let it carry you. It'll just unfold. It's part of it's really just having the intention of saying, I'm going to deal with this one thing that's coming up. That's what I can handle. And not burdening yourself with a sense of progress.
Yeah. I think sometimes we get so wrapped up in how it should look as an outcome that if we don't do that, or if we get also hung up in, if I do this process, I should appear as, or I should look like to others, or that I will reflect to others that sense of my accomplishment. And you're going, no. Just give yourself
right,
a break.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Just give yourself a break. And you know what? As we've said in the beginning of the show, these spiritual gurus, they have off days, dude. Now, let me tell you, when you have an off day and you're a spiritual guru, guess what you do? You go home and you hide. You say, oh, I have another obligation. You go home so you can work through it. Don't think that everybody is immune and everybody's on the roly-poly spiritual path and everybody's doing hunky-dory. No. And I think that I'm bringing that up because it's really vitally important that we share that not everything is easy, not everything is hunky-dory, and you do have ebb and flow. And we need to remember that, is that if life is an experience, we are made of energy. Energy ebbs and flows, and so does the earth. Well, hey, why are we resisting it, saying you have to be in this stuck spot? You know, Patrick, in closing, I'll just share this with you. It was so interesting. I was listening to the news this evening, and the lady was saying, oh, we've had this pothole out here, blah, 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 and it's been there for 3 months, and they won't fix it, and they keep coming out and saying that the pipes are leaking. And, you know, I just, in my head, just said, the earth is a breathing organism, and you're putting two pieces of pipe together, and you expect them to stay like that. Well, you need to expand your consciousness. You know, it was that she couldn't understand. She was insisting that she saw it very linear. Two pipes together, and they won't leak. I saw it as the earth is an expanding bubble, sort of like soap bubbles in your tub, you know, or in your sink. And how can you expect anything to, quote, stay perfect? You can't. So I think once we get through those concepts that everything is permanent, that everything is a material object, it has matter, weight, and density. Physics is going to go through the roof. But if we look at it and we say there is impermanence, then we won't be resisting and yelling about the potholes. We'll just say, okay, let's not put pipes. Let's figure out how to put flexible things in the ground instead of metal pipes. Oh, wow, wouldn't that be revolutionary? But,
exactly.
You know, it's like, really? Oh, okay, well, you know, hey, can I have a copyright or a trademark on that one, you know? But we have to really think that out, and I think that's really what's so vitally important is think outside, even if it's not the realm of what you thought before.
That's absolutely right. You know, that's a great example of somebody who looked at the world and said, it needs to look like the way I think it should look, as opposed to saying, the earth is telling me that it should look a little different. Now, how can I be in alignment with the earth here and come up with a solution like you just described?
Yeah. I'm getting a copyright on that or trademark or whatever the things are. Anyway, it's on the radio. It's already my, what do you call it?
It's already,
oh gosh.
It's your expression. It's your intellectual property.
That's it. Intellectual property. It's my intellectual property. Way cool. Well, Patrick, thank you so much for joining us. Can you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you and your book? That would be wonderful.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Jeanette. It's been an absolute pleasure. Yes, you can look at my a little bit more about me and find links to my books on my personal website, which is www.patrickpaulgarlinger.com. And you can also find the book When Thought Turns to Light on Amazon.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Perhaps you'll come back on I think October, we're having a lot of fear around death, end of life conversations. Perhaps you'll be willing to join us at that time. So we'll look forward to having you back.
Wonderful. I'm delighted. Thank you so much again, Dr. Jeanette.
Well, thank you. If you'd like to find out more information about Patrick Paul Garlinger again, the book is called When Thought Turns to Light, A Practical Guide to Spiritual Transformation. The link is on the bottom of today's show page. And if you'd like to find out more information, please do check out his link to his website. He has some writings there, and he also has another book. Hopefully we'll have him on soon to speak about that other book. And it really is about what is a spiritual transformation. It's about being okay, say, cool, I can let some of this stuff go, and hey, what's next experience down the line? As we've said many times on this radio show, this lifetime is really just a wardrobe change. We are just an eternal being, and we're just going to keep going through, and man, I'm ready for the next one. I'm so tired of the clothes that I've been wearing. I really need a really good wardrobe change. So on to the next existence, so they say, and let us know if you go poof. So thank you so much for joining us today. It's been such a pleasure to be with you. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and until tomorrow, have a wonderful day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit www.drjeanettewellness.com to schedule a phone appointment today with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.